You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 288 of Locked On Raptors for Monday, March 5th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors. You can find links to every single episode. And of course, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network. Across the network, lots of great stuff for you to check out. Daily Locked On NBA shows now with a vast range of hosts from around the network. Josh Lloyd's on there, Anthony Irwin, Wes Goldberg, and Dave Vermiller doing one. Adam Mares, I think, is doing it with Anthony on Fridays. The schedule is great, so you should make sure you check that out to get your daily dose of Locked On NBA. And then if you find a local show that you like, find that show on iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff, and make sure you're doing that with us as well. Find Locked On Raptors on iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review. It's the easiest thing you can do to help out the show. It shows that you care, shows that you want to support us, makes us more popular, and helps the algorithm, you know, churn out good results, I guess. So thanks in advance for doing that. On today's show, it's one of these Monday, there's not a whole lot to talk about, so we're just going to kind of recap the weekend and see where it goes, episodes with our pal Vivek Jacob. How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. Yeah, like you said, pretty relaxed Monday, outside of, you know, the news of DeMar DeRozan getting Player of the Week, and a little bit of activity on the free agency front. So I guess we can get to that later too.
Yeah, maybe we start with Nigel Hayes. I recall him being on those Wisconsin teams with like Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker. That's right. That's accurate, right? Yeah. Me, big college basketball
last
guy.
Last he was with Brandon Jennings.
What's that?
Well, last he was with Brandon Jennings, so
should be fun. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's been playing in the D-League this season for the Westchester Knicks. He signed a 10-day deal with the Raptors today, or he's going to sign one in the very near future. And he will be the 15th guy on the roster, at least for 10 days. That's something, I guess. He's been shooting threes at like 45% or something like that with Westchester. I'm not sure how much he's going to play, considering the Raptors have barely have enough time for, you know, their guys that they already have in the house. But it's interesting. He's a wing. He kind of fills the slot. If maybe they think OG Anunoby's injury is going to be longer term, maybe he can kind of just sort of help soak up some of those minutes or whatever. There's no drawback to it. They'll get to see a dude who at least was like thrown around as a potential draft pick during his draft year, which I think was last season or like the 2017 draft. So yeah, there's still some potential there, I guess, if you want to, you know, get excited about a 10-day guy. But I don't know. You watch the D League more than I do, the G League more than I do, and probably watch college basketball more than I do. Do you have any strong Nigel Hayes takes that you would like to share with us on the show today?
No, I think more than anything, he just fits the mold of what the Raptors are kind of looking for at that small forward position. Again, a guy who's 6'8", that can shoot the ball, that can rebound pretty well. So I think just another guy that the Raptors can get a look at. Over the summer, they worked him out, and he had a pretty good workout. And I think he was in the same workout as Kyle Kuzma. So I think there's maybe just, you know, this is just, you know, the final 15, 20 games of the season, and you're just trying to figure out what's what, maybe even trying to get a better perspective of how to go about the off season. So I think all those things factor in. And we've seen a bit of that with Malcolm Miller of late. So unlike Malcolm Miller, I guess with a 10-day, he can technically be signed on and then be playoff eligible. We talked about this earlier. Malcolm won't be because he's on the two-way. So yeah, it's just another chance to get a look at a guy and figure out what's what. And, you know, there's no real harm in it. And on the G League side of things, it kind of helps the Raptors 905, who are chasing the Westchester Knicks in the standings. They're currently 2.5 games behind. And so now they take Nigel Hayes off that team, and maybe things get a little easier for them.
Yeah, that's like some galaxy brain shit right there. If that's like their, that can't be like a consideration that they haven't thought of. Like that's pretty obvious. I would think that at least crossed their minds.
Hey, you know what? There were teams that did it to the 905 last year when they made the playoff run. You know, you had Axel Toupin getting picked up, and so
Eddie Tavares by the Cavs, who they played Canton in the playoffs, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So So, you know, time for a little payback, I guess.
Yeah, it sure worked last year for those teams trying to sabotage the 905. Bruno Caboclo and Pascal Siakam are having none of that. I think I'm happier with the Raptors going this route with like a dude who kind of has some unknown potential or whatever, and who's not like a high risk or anything, and you're not obligated to give him minutes. I kind of prefer they do this with their last roster spot for the last part of the season than go out and get a veteran dude who's just going to sit there and not do anything or play minutes in place of someone that you'd rather be on the court. So this is an interesting thing. Like the Raptors, you know, they have no sort of qualms about trying to be creative with player development and seeing what they can do. I mean, obviously the Bruno experiment's the biggest example, but you know, Fred VanVleet, undrafted free agent, and he look at where he is now. He's inexpendable to this team, and I'm not saying Nigel Hayes will become that, but it's a nice bit of it's just intriguing that they're going after dudes like this, and like a 6'8 dude who shoots threes, that dude can play in the NBA if like the threes play up. That's a very useful player to have on an NBA team. So nothing wrong with this at all. I wonder how long it'll be until he starts a game, because Malcolm Miller started last night. It sounds like Dwayne Casey from his pre- and post-game stuff last night. Like he's just going to tinker and sort of play around with that small forward spot, I think, for a little bit here, just because, A, the Raptors are really good and can win games even if they're getting nothing from the small forward spot, and OG was kind of providing next to nothing for a little while before he got hurt anyway. And then, B, like, why not just see what you have, right? And I think, he said he was very emphatic in saying that, like, there's no controversy for the small forward spot. He's not saying, oh, Malcolm Miller has jumped Norm Powell in the rotation or anything like that, although maybe you can make an argument that he should by now. But I don't know. It's interesting. I don't think Hayes will start right away. I wouldn't be shocked if he picked up a start if like the Raptors are going to rest dudes. They have a couple back-to-backs coming up. Next Tuesday, they take on the Magic in the first half of the back-to-back. The second half is in Cleveland, and they're in Orlando the first night of it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like a rest game. Maybe we see like a Nigel Hayes outburst or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, it's interesting at least that I guess this is 2 weeks from now, so maybe that's too far out. He'll have to get a second 10-day. Either way, it's a good little thing that they're doing, and I wouldn't expect much from it, but I don't know. Do you prefer they do this than, you know, go sign Ersan Ilyasova or whoever the hell we were talking about as a bio guy?
Yeah, absolutely. And we touched on this on the previous podcast as well, where the Raptors are in this spot where, you know, you don't want to have the bench guys who have earned so much of their playing time looking over and wondering who's this new guy that's just coming in and taking their minutes. And on the flip side, you do kind of want someone that can also push them a little bit. So now you bring in someone who's hungry but isn't guaranteed anything, because these guys have no reputation, right? Malcolm Miller, Nigel Hayes, two guys that, you know, if they get an opportunity, they're going to try and do the best they can. But at the same time, nothing's going to be given to them. So, you look at the schedule coming up as well. The Raptors, I think they have the right to be a little bit cocky, especially with their record against below 500 teams. So you look at Atlanta on Tuesday, you look at, you know, the Knicks, the Nets, the Mavs. They might only play four guys. You've got Orlando. That stuff comes up if he gets a second 10-day. But it's a good portion of the schedule to get a look at these guys and figure out what they are. And like I said, just maybe simplify your decision-making in the offseason.
I think it's at the point, it's late enough in the season now too, where this isn't like a luxury tax concern or anything like that as well. So that's nice to keep in mind, I suppose, if you're into that sort of thing. So Nigel Hayes, just to give you his numbers from the Westchester Knicks, 38 games played, 16.1 points, 6.7 boards, 2.1 assists, 1.4 steals, shooting 45% from three on 5.4 attempts. So he's already the Raptors' best three-point shooter. speaking of good three-point shooters from the G League, Malcolm Miller started last night, kind of in a surprise move. I don't think really anyone was predicting that would happen until the pregame with Dwayne Casey. He was like, we're going to just cycle some guys in there. You know, we're going to just, there's no controversy, nothing like that, but we might cycle guys, some guys in. And then from there, it kind of felt like Miller might get the start. And what did you think of his, I mean, you gassed him up on last week's podcast. I think, you know, people look at like the, you know, he went scoreless, had just one rebound in 14 minutes, and maybe they think it's a bad game, but I don't know, I thought he looked fine out there. I thought he looked like he belonged at least a little bit. He didn't look like he was overmatched or anything like that. He was just kind of doing stuff off the ball, setting some screens here, doing a little bit of cutting. Didn't lead to anything for him, but I think it like fit well within the entire construct of the team. What did you think of Malcolm Miller's first career start?
Yeah, I thought he did well. You looked at what he did defensively. He was able to pick up a tomb. He was able to switch on to, you know, Kemba or Marvin Williams whenever it was needed. And then offensively, he did exactly what he was supposed to. He was running to the corners. He was getting into open shots beyond the arc and just spreading the floor. So that's exactly what you want out of the small forward spot. And he gave them that. Obviously, both his shots he missed, but you're watching the game, they both rimmed out, so That's just luck sometimes. So
he was not alone in having threes rim out last night either.
No, not at all.
It was ridiculous. I
mean, the Raptors could have had, you know, 30 points in the first 5 minutes of the game if those fell in, but like Dwayne Casey says, it's a make or miss league.
Yeah, Dwayne Casey, he came back to the old I think my favorite analogy or euphemism, or I don't know, just saying that he's come up with this season was the one about how the playoffs are like a dude waiting in a dark alley with a baseball bat. He brought that up again last night. It was great. I don't really know what he means. I guess it's that the playoffs are, they hit you hard, I guess. I don't know, but that came out again last night, so that was fun. Also fun, DeMar DeRozan, Player of the Week. The most anonymous Player of the Week award ever earned by somebody, maybe? Like, with just 20 points, 6 assists. You know, the Raptors didn't play, I don't think, their best basketball this week. They didn't blow teams out or anything like that. There were no real high-profile wins. But DeMar DeRozan gets Player of the Week. I guess no one else in the East had a decent week. This is a weird one to me. I was not expecting this whatsoever when it came across the wire.
Yeah, it definitely came as a surprise to me as well. Boston had a good week, but I guess they lost the Rockets. And then you look at DeMar, I think the biggest thing for him is the fact that it's almost a nod to what the Raptors have committed to this season, where, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And so, you know, you look at DeMar with the 5 assists a game. It was only 20 points a game, but it came on about 58% true shooting. So The efficiency is there. And, you know, he's getting other guys involved, and he's just taking what comes to him. The game's coming easy to him. You look at the 4-0 week, besides the Washington game, which you expected to be a tough one, the Raptors really did what they had to. So, you know, the 4-0 week, I guess, in the East, you're always going to be in the running. And besides that, you know, maybe this is a bit wrong of me to say, but maybe it's the NBA also looking out for a guy that's a bit down on himself right now.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Who knows? That's definitely out there. I'm glad that DeMar's been talking about this stuff. I mean, this is not really basketball related, but I'm pretty glad that, you know, he took the time to talk with Doug Smith. I don't know if we've talked about it since it happened, actually.
No, we haven't.
When it came out last week. I haven't talked about it on the podcast, really. And so I feel weird talking about this kind of stuff because, like, I personally, like, I'm very lucky in that I can't really relate to, you know, going through mental health stuff. Like, I know people who have, and I always try to be as supportive as possible, but I can't relate as well to this stuff as a lot of people can out there. So I don't have a whole lot to say about, like, I mean, I had someone ask me, like, oh, do you think it's like Twitter's fault that he's there? I have no idea. Obviously there's lots of stuff going on with him, but I'm glad that he's out there sharing. I'm glad he gave Doug Smith the time to get it out there. And I think the most encouraging thing that I've seen, not just with like basketball, just like this year period, was just like the amount of outpouring of support that came for DeMar DeRozan when he originally tweeted that first, it was like a song lyric he originally tweeted, but like obviously opening up to Doug Smith, like that like the support and the outpouring of just like appreciation and love for DeMar was it's really heartwarming and something that frankly I'm shocked about in 2018, considering how terrible everything is and how shitty people are on the internet. Pretty glad that there was no like, oh well, why are you so depressed, you're so rich bullshit takes out there. That was nice to see, I suppose. I'm sure they were there, but they weren't really in my face, so that's good to see.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. You know, whatever negative takes there were, they were definitely drowned out by all the positivity he received, and he even reflected on that. And then for him to take it even a step further from, you know, talking about it with the Toronto media, to even be on ESPN when the Raptors play the Wizards and talk about it even further there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a big thing as well. So, you know, again, he's going through a lot, you know, in terms of his parents' health, in terms of his own personal family situation. So, yeah, I'm glad that he feels comfortable enough to share and let people know that it's okay to talk about this stuff. And hopefully he's better for it soon enough.
Yeah, here's hoping. Damar, if you're listening, which I'm sure Damar is, I know he's a big listener of the pod. We love you, man, and stay strong. And glad that you're sharing your personal story, because I'm sure it's helping people. You know, seeing an NBA athlete, you know, have this sort of relatable thing going on, I think it can only be a good thing for people who are onlooking and, you know, sort of considering their own situation and whether or not, you know, they're the only person, if they feel like isolated or alone. Like, this is not, you're not alone, because, you know, even the wealthiest and most popular athlete in the middle of maybe in Toronto, one of the most popular athletes in Toronto, in the middle of one of the best seasons, maybe his best season ever, you know, he's going through this and he's able to talk about it. And it's nice that it's very relatable and very human of him. And it's nice to see. So shout out to Damar always. You touched on the Wizards game. There's no easy way to transition away from this. You touched on the Wizards game. I only really saw this one like on a strange angle on a bar TV for like a little bit of it, because I had a friend in town who I hadn't seen in like 6 months, so I was out there doing that, and so I didn't really see the game. Raptors win 102-95. The Wizards are, you know, whatever. I expected the Raptors to lose this one, honestly. They've been weird against the Wizards without John Wall this season. Bradley Beal seems to really have his way against the Raptors, and, like, Bradley Beal's having a great season. And he's had a pretty good game, 23 points on, you know, 19 shots. I guess that's not his, you know, peak game, but he was pretty good. And I don't know, what was your takeaway from this game? It feels like a game in which, you know, it was close, but people kind of came away feeling heartened, I think, by maybe the crunch time performance, or just like the ability to hunker down when they didn't quite have it and take a win away from it anyway.
I think more than anything, this is the kind of night that you've been hoping from CJ Miles.
Right.
You know, you look at the inconsistency that he's had for most of the season, and there have been those moments in games, those stretches where he's had good looks, and you know that, you know, these are the stages where you can break a game open. And for the Raptors to sort of be hanging in there in the fourth quarter and be looking for that momentum for CJ to just make shot after shot after shot, and the one that he made from the corner sort of falling out of bounds, that's the one that, you know, sticks out the most. And so for him to have that kind of night, Van Vliet was terrific once again in his role, finished with 12 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, and got to the line 8 times.
Yeah. Salvaged a bad shooting night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, so Lowry, you know, the Stars are going to have down nights, and so for him to go 1-for-5 from 3, finished it with just 10 points, he sort of had that Lowry game where he does all the other things,
yeah,
as you expect. But yeah, again, CJ Miles, the biggest standout for me. Bradley Beal is just awesome. You just have to respect what that guy's done in the absence of Wall and the way he's carried that team. Satoransky, you know, he's really stepped up in Wall's absence as well. Otto Porter is awesome as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a really fun game, and then for CJ Miles to break out the way he did, that was huge.
Yeah, and then Sunday against the Hornets, I was at that game. I wanted to sleep the entire game. It wasn't the most riveting matchup in the history of the world. The Raptors have owned the Hornets all season, and it felt like they were on their way to another blowout, but fourth quarter, the offense kind of dried up a little bit. The missed threes kind of caught up to them. I think they went like, they had like a stretch of missing like 8 straight threes at the start of the fourth or something crazy like that. And it wasn't their best night overall, but the Hornets kind of suck. So the Raptors, it's nice that the Raptors are at this point where they can just coast by while not playing their best basketball and still beat bad teams, because they're just that good and that deep. And there's enough guys that do stuff on a given night to be pretty effective. And I think last night, you know, Dwayne Casey, his first thing he said in his post game last night was that, like, this is a game I think we lose last year. And that's kind of what I wrote my recap about for Raptors HQ, and that, like, yeah, like, this wasn't the cleanest game by the Raptors all season, but there were lots of different things that happened throughout that were kind of peppered in that kind of displayed the vast amount of growth that they've gone through this season and sort of the changing of their identity. And, you know, those changes, I think, are kind of the difference between losing and winning a game like last night where you don't really have it at 100%. I mean, Jonas Valanciunas and Serge Ibaka were a killer. They kind of carried the offense for stretches. And you look back, and in the past, it's been Lowry, DeRozan, and then who the hell else is going to provide offense? That's always been such an issue in the playoffs and things like that. So to have Ibaka and JV just kind of carry it, it was very heartening to see. And for them to be just, like, bombing threes as well. At one point, they were, I think, 5 for 7 combined from three, and the rest of the team was, like, 3 of 18. So that was pretty fun. And then, like, late in the game as well, you know, we've talked about the crunch time offense to death on this podcast and just, like, watching this team this season. And it wasn't perfect. There was, like, a weird DeMar three that he heaved up that went in, but, like, was probably pretty ill-advised. And a couple of possessions where he kind of hijacked the offense a little bit. But, like, he made it work. He scored in a couple. He had an and-one late in the game after he made Nick Batum look like 45 years old, just blowing by him with so much ease to get that and-one. And then, there was a possession late in the game where Lowry, like, kicked it to JV in the corner, and, you know, he attempted a corner three. And it was like, hey, this positive offense, what the hell's going on? And then also JV being in the corner for a three, that's weird, but, like, I feel good about that. It's strange. But, like, all these changes were kind of a play last night. So even in a game where they weren't, you know, totally sharp, you know, they kind of still, the cream still rose, I guess, so to speak, in that game. What did you take away from the Hornets win?
My biggest takeaway was Jonas Valanciunas pump faking at the 3-point line, getting Dwight Howard to fall for it.
Oh my god! Yeah, the rim. Yeah.
That was amazing. It took me a bit to recover from that one. I'm sure it took even longer for Dwight Howard. But yeah, like you said, the Raptors got out to a quick start. They were moving the ball really well. Lowry and DeRozan, they were finding, you know, Jonas and Ibaka rolling to the rim. That's exactly what you want to do when you're getting trapped. And, you know, Jonas and Ibaka, they did a good job, you know, sort of finding those seams where those two could make the pass as well. So I think it really works well for Ibaka, especially when he works his game inside out. And, you know, there's a lot of times where teams will give him that three early on, and he'll just settle for it, and then he just seems to be out of it. If he makes it, great, but in general, he just seems to take it and then just stay out of rhythm all game. So it was nice to see him get to the rack early and then sort of the mid-range and then move out to the three-point line. And, you know, that was exactly the type of game that you want to see Ibaka play all season long. And as long as this is the Ibaka that shows up in the playoffs, they should feel very good about their post presence with the combination of Jonas.
Yeah, I feel reasonably confident that we're going to see good Ibaka in the playoffs. We saw it last year, and I think of anyone on this team, he's the most likely to be coasting during the regular season, because this dude has been in some damn wars, man. Like, he knows what it takes to go deep in the playoffs. He knows, I think, sort of the triviality of the regular season better than most people. And, like, I think we saw last night, the flashes are still there. So maybe while his season has been, you know, sort of uneven and not quite what you would expect from a $20 million+ player, I think he's going to make that difference up in the playoffs, because we saw he was probably the best player for the Raptors against the Bucks until Game 6 when DeRozan went off. I think Ibaka was just so crucial to everything they did in that series. He blocked Giannis a bunch of times. His rim protection has been really good this season. All his block numbers are down. Like, it's still there for him. And the fact that I think the most encouraging thing is that Ibaka Valanciunas has been, like, a reasonable pairing defensively, and it was again last night. And, you know, obviously it's the Hornets, so who knows? Although the Hornets and Kemba Walker have been a team that have really sort of messed with Jonas in the past. So the fact that Serge and JV look good together, you can close games with those two confidently. I didn't think that was going to be a thing at the start of the year. I was, like, kind of expecting Ibaka to play center in most fourth quarters. All of it's positive, and the games like last night kind of give you an indication of what Serge is capable of, and, you know, I think we'll see that come playoff time. I don't really have that much concern over that. Norm Powell.
Sorry, go ahead. I do want to touch on just quickly with Ibaka is I feel like quite a few people sort of touch on, oh, he's making 20 million, this and that. And, you know, I think you have to acknowledge that when a guy's 27, if you're only going to get him on a 3-year deal, you are going to overpay a bit, get the short-term contract. And so overall, if you said you were giving Ibaka a 3-year, $65 million deal, the 3 years is what stands out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And like to lock that in sync with the timelines of Kyle and DeMar, I think this is very valuable. So I'm with you there. It's the thing. I thought Ibaka was going to be a guy that people were going to be like very against this season, because usually there's just like a whipping boy somewhere. But I think it's been nice that even though his season hasn't been quite what people would have expected, his numbers aren't like staggering across the board or anything like that. Like, I think people kind of realize for the most part that this is to be expected. And his numbers would be much more impressive if he weren't playing 5 minutes less per game than he has in the past either, which is also important for keeping him fresh for, again, the playoffs when that dude just becomes really good. Like, he's a good – it's nice to have a good playoff player on the team, a proven playoff player. I gotta say, it's pretty comforting. Norm Powell, supposed to be a good playoff player. I don't know if he's gonna get a chance to play in the playoffs at this rate. Last night, just 4 minutes. Again, that kind of uncomfortable situation where you throw Powell in the second quarter, like in that little pocket of minutes just before the break, and it's not really ideal because, you know, he didn't start the game. You're not really sure if he's going to get to come back out for the third quarter at all, or if he's going to play again in the game after that if he plays poorly. And he played poorly, he certainly did. 0-3 from the field. He missed a couple threes. Missed a weird sort of running brick-ass layup or floater off the glass that just really had no chance of going in. It was like classic Powell just going way too hard to the rim and not really having much of a plan. He picked up a couple boards and was a +3 in those minutes, but he also fouled Kemba Walker shooting a three. Just did not look very good. I don't know. Where are you at with this Powell thing? Because I really sympathize with him, because he talked about it today and just like he knows that he's not playing well, but he's like confident it's going to turn around. At some point, we have to look at like the sample of this season and say like this is just what he is this year, don't we?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but you know, sometimes a guy just has a down year. People are sort of jumping all over the extension now. I think it's just safe to say that this is a down year for him. He's got some things to figure out. He's obviously got to figure out how he can improve his in-between game, because when his shot's not falling from the outside, he's not able to get to the rim the way he was last season. And guys have sort of picked up on that, you know, that one-speed dribble attack to the rim, and they've taken that away. Mm-hmm. So he's got to figure out how else he can get himself going and make the game easier on himself. So at this point, you know, Casey keeps saying that he's someone that's going to be that's going to sort of have that moment in the playoffs, or he's going to be needed for a stretch, and you can see the possibility of that just because of OG being a rookie and, you know, his struggles from the outside, and CJ Miles's inconsistency, and Malcolm Mueller obviously won't be available. So you can see a scenario in which Casey's going to have to turn to him and say, hey, we need something from you. But whether it's realistic to expect the old Norman Powell at this point, I don't know. I think you just have to wait and see and hope.
Yeah. Right now, so far this season, and like it's getting concerning in terms of like his overall numbers. He's at 28.5% from deep, and like I think the big thing that made him so viable in the starting five last year was that he wasn't just that one-track mind driver. Like, he was able to just hit open threes when the ball swung to him, and especially against the Bucks, when you know, you open threes are kind of what killed that Bucks team because of their scrambling defense. Like, that was so vital. So like I think the way he's played this season and the areas in which he's been poor, I think kind of are not going to be very conducive to him having that playoff moment unless he can completely change things around and flip it on its head. And now for his career, he's one attempt away from 400 threes on his career, and he's at 32.8%, which is pretty much where he was in college. And I don't know. I have concerns that this is just going to kind of be what he is. And I mean, there's room for him to get better, and I'm not yet fretting about the extension, because the extension is not like crazy money, and we've seen worse contracts get moved and stuff like that in the last couple of years anyway. But
yeah,
it's not ideal for the Raptors because, like, as deep as they are, it's nice to have even more options. And, you know, Norm has been a guy who's proven that he can come in cold in the playoffs and do so, and perform to a level that's, like, you know, kind of unexpected, but also very vital for the Raptors in order to survive. So not having that little utility tool or whatever the hell you want to call it, the break glass in case of emergency dude in the playoffs playing at his full potential, that's going to hurt the Raptors, I'm sure. At least maybe it loses them a game or a quarter here or something like that, where otherwise they would be sort of better off with him, you know, being able to be what he was last year. But I don't know, it's nice at least that the Raptors, and this is again sort of going back to the, you know, improvement over the course of the entire season for the team as a whole, like, if you had told me at the start of the year that Norman Powell was going to be this bad, I would have been like, all right, well, the Raptors are in trouble because he's their second best wing at this point, and I'm not sure what you can count on from anyone else behind him on the depth chart, but geez, it's worked out just fine. And, you know, with Norm not being, you know, as good as maybe we hoped he would be, it hasn't really hurt the Raptors very much at all in the grand scheme of things. And again, that could change come playoff time, but the fact that they're still 45-17 and they have all these different lineups they can run out, and Fred's been so good, I think that it's kind of mitigated the consequences of his poor season. But I don't think it makes it any less disappointing that he's been this bad, because just think about where they could be if he was playing to his potential as well. So yeah, hopefully you can figure it out. I don't even know where you find minutes for him, and I guess maybe this is if the Raptors can kind of build their cushion here. Maybe they can start to rest some guys, maybe just try to get Norm some reps before the playoffs. But other than that, like, do you see a way in which they can incorporate Norm into the rotation and not sort of screw things up? Because, you know, the way the bench is played, it doesn't make sense to throw Norm with that group right now, because, like, it's just, why mess with something that's, like, works so magically?
Yeah, if OG is healthy, then it's tough, right? Because then you have to go for CJ shooting off the bench, and there's just no other way. The only way I can see it is the way it's been, with OG getting hurt and then him slotting into the starting role just to keep that bench unit together. So barring injury, it's going to be tough for Powell to crack the rotation the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Seems like a good place to leave the podcast off. Leave everyone sad. right? This should be a fine week. It should be a good week. The Raptors take on the Hawks tomorrow. They're awful. They take on Detroit Wednesday. They, too, are awful. And then it's going to be really fun to watch that Houston game on Friday. I'm excited for it. It should be a blast. I think we're both going to be there. So maybe we'll do one of these things after that game or something like that. But Vivek, do you have anything you'd like to plug right now?
If you're interested in more sadness, I will have something on Norman Powell coming out for Raptors Republic tomorrow, Tuesday. And so you can look forward to that at about 11 a.m.
Hook it to my veins. Give me the sadness. You can read the thing I wrote about the Hornets game last night, in which I kind of just did like an oral dictation of, essentially, during one of my spiels on this podcast at Raptors HQ. You can also check out Friday's podcast with Glenn Grunwald. That was a fun one to do, and Glenn was great, and he had some nice... he was pretty candid, honestly. I wasn't expecting him to sort of reveal some of the things that he did. Maybe it's been revealed at some point in the past, but it was stuff that was new to me. So if you want to check out that, make sure you find Friday's podcast, and also Thursday's podcast with Katie Heindel, where we did a dramatic reading of her short story about Chuck Hayes. I put a lot of work into that one, and I would appreciate it if you freaking listened to it, because it was really fun and silly and weird, and we're definitely going to do more of them because Katie's awesome, and I have lots of fun doing weird audio editing stuff. So please check out those podcasts from last week. We will have more coming up this week as well. Not sure of the content that will be on them. We'll see. Thursday night, though, you can come to Hoop Talks Trivia Night if you're missing the trivia podcast. Those will be back either next week or the week after, just depending on the schedule here. But you come to Trivia Night at The Pint, 277 Front Street West in Toronto. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's kind of at the base of the CN Tower, essentially. So right in the thick of it, right off the GO train if you want to come in from out of town. If you haven't been to one of these Trivia Nights, Vivek has been to one of these, and he can vouch for them being pretty fun. So come on out, sign up your team. You can go to my pinned tweet. I have the link in there for you to sign up a team of three, or you can sign up as a free agent and we'll just stick you on a team. We got a few that have signed up as well that we're going to just randomly assign to different teammates, and that should be fun as well. Name your team something good, please. The all-time winner in terms of best name at Trivia Night is two beers away from being two beers away. There's one team right now that's signed up as Snap, Crackle, and Pop, but the Pop is like P-A-P-E, like Pop So. So please check that out. And yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back again. Vivek, what, are you there? I think we lost Vivek. Either way,
Here.
Oh, he's there. sorry,
I was just muted for a second.
Okay, no sweat. Yeah, but sorry.
Sorry.
Tell the people that Trivia Night's fun, please.
Trivia Night is indeed fun. If you're looking for crazy Raptors trivia, Sean has a pretty distinct ability to find the most bizarre Raptors questions. So if you're looking to refresh your memory on all the darkest days of the Raptors from 1996 till, 2000. When did the Raptors get good? 2012?
2014, yeah.
Make sure you get to that trivia. So, yeah, it's definitely a fun time. And you're at a bar having a good time with some good Raptors fans.
Yes, so please do that. Again, my pinned tweet, check out the link, and sign on up. And that is going to be it for today's podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you tomorrow with another episode of Locked On Raptors. Have a good one.